sinker ballers would be good guys to bunt.
They are the best.
And the bunt is down. Gomez looks to... Oh!
You know, especially about the last 3 weeks, the feeling of us being never out of a game has returned, and finding ways to score. I'm a lot more confident in some of that.
Let's go Royals! Let's go Royals! We're peaking at the right time. September is here.
Too bad you tanked the first 3 months.
Yeah,
of the season.
I mean, we're gonna tank. Let's just tank. Why change our mind now?
Oh man.
Royals win last night. Pretty exciting. A bunt. And the White Sox, who aren't very good, but better than the Royals, but not right now. Throw the ball away, as you heard. The exciting call, Ryan Lefever. Jacob Junis, fantastic again last night. Goes 8 strong innings, but gets a no decision. And Brian Goodwin doubled to lead off the 10th. And then he advances all the way home as they're trying to bunt. Goodwin the third. Escobar's bunt fielded and thrown away. And Royals win. 48-95 the record now. They need to go 9-8. Yeah, 9-8 the rest of the way to avoid their worst season in their 50-year history of Royals baseball. But they have been playing better here lately. There is an enthusiasm. There's an energy. Younger guys are having fun. And I feel a little bit better about where this organization is now than I felt, say, a month or 2 months ago. And I do like some of the moves they made in trades. Jorge Lopez, a near-perfect game. They traded Moustakas and got a good pitcher there, it looks like. And I like the center fielder Phillips, a good defensive player. I don't know about offense. And they got some pieces with some of their trades. And maybe they're a little further along in the process than we think. But we shall find out next year. But the Royals do win. Very exciting win for the boys in blue. All right, local sports information. Let me see if Dusty has it all right here. Yes, he does. We've got high school volleyball tonight. Beloit's at Minneapolis. Thunder Ridge Triangular, St. John's Tipton, Thunder Ridge Pike Valley tonight. Lakeside Triangular, Lakeside Lincoln and Chase. Wilson Triangular, Wilson, Sylvan Lucas and Osborne. Tescott Triangular, Tescott, Rock Hill, Southern Cloud will be at that one. And TMP Quad, Smith Center, TMP Phillipsburg and Ellis all competing in volleyball at that quad at TMP. So a lot of volleyball going on. Speaking of volleyball, congratulations to the Beloit Lady Trojans and the Thunder Ridge Lady Longhorns volleyball teams. They've been named the NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone Cable Athletes of the Week. Beloit went 5-0 this weekend and claimed the Southeast Saline Tournament Championship for the first time in school history. They beat Southeast Saline, Abilene, and Smoky Valley in pool play, beat Salina South in the semis, and then won the championship over Abilene. Beloit's now 8-1 on the season after their 5-0 performance on Saturday in Gypsum. Thunder Ridge, only undefeated team locally in our area, stayed undefeated on the season as they doubled their record to 12-0. They won the Southern Cloud Tournament in Miltonvale. The Lady Longhorns beat Bennington, Southern Cloud, and Blue Valley Randolph in pool play. They beat Rock Hills in the quarters, St. John's Tipton in the semis, and won the championship match over Hanover. Thunder Ridge, only team left in our area that remains undefeated in 2018. Congratulations, Thunder Ridge Lady Longhorns, the Beloit Lady Trojans are athletes of the week, as those volleyball teams off to terrific starts. For latest sports information locally when it comes to high school sports, visit ncksports.com. All right, we're going to talk some football. The Chiefs winning over the Chargers over the weekend. The Broncos won over the Seahawks. And the Raiders last night were right there with the Rams, but the second half, it got away from them. John Gruden's return as coach of the Raiders, the $100 million man. Oakland loses to the L.A. Rams in Oakland 33-13, and it just looked I'm not a brilliant man. People know that. But trading away your best defensive player really kind of showed up last night. Khalil Mack is with the Bears, and he almost single-handedly beat the Packers the other night. It took a superhuman performance by Aaron Rodgers in the second half for the Bears not to win. And he was terrific. Khalil Mack had a pick six for a touchdown, forced a fumble, recovered it. He's just hard to deal with. Raiders traded him away for a couple of first-round picks. And the Raiders last night, what was their biggest problem against the Rams? Couldn't get any pressure from their pass rush. Correct. It's almost as if they could have used Khalil Mack last night. Oh, wait a minute. They traded him away. So the Raiders lose to the Rams. And I've been saying all along that, you know, that you look at some of the moves that have been made. The Raiders trade Khalil Mack helps everybody else in the division. And then the Chargers with all their injuries, Joey Bosa's out, and Verrett, their corner, and Hunter Henry, a very good tight end out for the year. That helps the rest of the division. So you're left with, this is the way I look at it, I've never been on the Charger bandwagon at all this whole offseason. Then you add in the injuries, and the only game I got right this week, by the way, on my predictions, was the Chiefs beating the Chargers. So I felt good about that. And the Raiders, I think, are kind of trying to retool everything. So it looks like they're a ways away and traded their best defensive player, probably their best player overall, for future picks. Denver brought in a quarterback that's better than last year's quarterback, still have a good defense. You know, you and I are both saying this, and not because I'm a Chiefs fan and Chad's a Bronco fan. We were both saying the Broncos and the Chiefs are probably the two best teams in this division. And after week one, that's been proven to be correct. Although, yeah. Once again, short term, you know, the Chiefs get rolled by the Steelers and Denver loses big this weekend, then all of a sudden you're going to go, who the heck is going to win this division? Chargers go out and look great. But right now, it does look like Denver's going to be the biggest threat to the Chiefs for the Chiefs to win their third division title in a row. It's going to be Denver standing in their way because I don't think the Chargers are that good. They always start slow, and the Raiders have a lot of issues.
Raiders have, especially on defense.
Yes.
You know, particularly defensively. But their offense looked pretty good at times, and it was a tale of two halves. It was definitely a game of two halves. I watched the first half last night. It was competitive. It was it was exciting to watch, and then I didn't make it much longer after halftime, and it started to get away from them, obviously, after that, and I didn't see it. But the talent evidently showed through for the Rams in the second half, particularly on the offensive end.
Well, they decided to give the ball.
They did pitch a shutout the second half too, I guess.
They decided to give the ball to Gurley, and he, you know, you pound it with Gurley, the good things are going to happen.
That's a good option.
Yeah, it is. The Rams respond second half, scoring 23 unanswered, and Derek Carr didn't even bother throwing in the direction of Aqib Talib or in the direction of Marcus Peters last night. He stayed on one side of the field, and I found it interesting. Marcus Peters now is the right cornerback at the bottom of your TV screen, and Kansas City was on the other side. Oh, so it wasn't Peters that couldn't play both sides. It's Bob Sutton's strategy. But now I see Kendall Fuller playing both sides. So I'm like, why didn't Bob Sutton let Marcus Peters play both sides? Because Peters doesn't tackle? I mean, maybe that's the reason. I still don't understand what Sutton was doing with Peters.
Well, the only time I saw Talib try to tackle anybody last night,
he got absolutely drilled
and rolled.
Jared Cook ran him over.
Yes. That dude is a matchup nightmare.
And then Marcus Peters says, see, Aqib, that's why you don't try to tackle. Because Peters doesn't like to tackle, as we know.
Right.
The other game last night, the Jets blew out the Lions. Sam Darnold's first NFL pass attempt was a pick six the other way. He bounced back. So did the Jets. Jets got an interception return for a touchdown, a punt return for a touchdown, and they blew it open the second half. Matt Stafford, the Lions, had four interceptions in the game. And he's getting paid a lot of money to stink last night.
Mm-hmm.
Jets beat the Lions 48-17. So week one is in the books. The Rams and the Jets win last night. All right, looking back over the weekend, the Chiefs. Of course, you hear the Chiefs this weekend when they take on the Steelers on Z96.3 The Lake. Just to recap a little bit, because we didn't have a lot of time to go into it yesterday, but you know the pros and cons from week one, the way I look at it, first of all, Patrick Mahomes was a huge pro. Tyreek Hill, of course, is a huge pro. Those two had huge days. But also kind of overlooked was Dee Ford played really well, which surprised me. Played extremely well. Looked like a guy in a contract year. Oh, wait a minute. He is.
Oh.
But he looks healthy. That's also important. And then the other thing that was overlooked, I think, is the Chiefs' offensive line did a pretty good job. I know Joey Bosa was not playing for the Chargers, but Melvin Ingram didn't really get to the quarterback. I thought Andy Reid's play calling was pretty good for the most part. I didn't like his first and second goal from the one calls, and then they eventually scored on third and goal. Just give the ball to Hunt and let him have a shot at it, which leads me to a few of the cons. I think the Chiefs need to use Kareem Hunt a little bit more. I don't want them to wear him out, but I thought there were some times where Mahomes took too many hits running the ball, and there's a concern and a con, as Mahomes maybe took too many hits in the running game. But the offensive line protected pretty well. One of the cons would be that Kelce was not involved. He only had one catch for 6 yards. I think the question now is Kelce, I think, is somewhat of a selfish player, but I don't think he's a prima donna. I think it'll be interesting to see if Kelce rocks the boat. If he goes 3 or 4 games and Hill's getting all the numbers, or Watkins or Hunt, and Kelce, even though the Chiefs are winning, Kelsey's not getting his numbers, will he rock the boat? We shall see. Usually winning cures that. The other thing, of course, the con is the defense. And then the other thing you have to sit here and say is, will Eric Berry return this year? Will he play at all this year? And I'm not convinced he will. And then will Justin Houston actually get on the plane and make it to Pittsburgh? Because he was non-existent against the Chargers. And I've heard this now 2 years in a row. Well, Houston's healthy. Just wait. Houston's going to be back to the way he was. I'm going to say right now, he's never going to get back to where he was. Never. He's had too many injuries, the wear and tear. He got his fat contract. And then he got hurt, and he's not going to be the same player. If he could be just 80% of what he once was, that would be a huge, huge boost for the Chiefs defense. He's nowhere close. I don't even know if he's 50% of what he once was. His run defense is okay. He can't get to the quarterback. He doesn't have that explosive first step anymore off the edge. He's in pass coverage a little bit more than maybe he should, although if he's not getting the passer when he's rushing him, maybe he should be in pass coverage now. I don't know. But that would be a con for the Chiefs. The special teams was very good. Offense looks unstoppable, but it was the Chargers. Keep that in mind. But the defense was not very good, and the Chargers could have had 700 yards of offense if their receivers caught the football. By the way, if you really are into numbers and you think numbers tell a story, and they do sometimes, but numbers can be very misleading. Phillip Rivers had 228 yards passing in the fourth quarter and two touchdown passes against the Chiefs' prevent defense. Mm-hmm. You know, we criticize the Chiefs' defense, but it should be pointed out the Chiefs only gave up 12 points in the first three quarters.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave up yards, which is, you know, they're going to do that.
Well, yeah.
But they,
yeah.
If they can be 15th in the league like last year in points allowed, then this Chiefs team has a chance to go in the playoffs, win the division, and make a little bit of noise. I don't think they're going to make a lot of noise and go deep, deep, deep to the Super Bowl. But if they could do that, they'll be okay. They can bend but not break type of defense. But the Chargers, they're very fortunate. The Chargers dropped four balls, two that could have been touchdowns. Another one is at least a 45-yard pickup. Those plays will be made by Pittsburgh if the Chiefs give them that this weekend.
Oh, there's no question about that. Yeah, I mean, somebody said that Phillip Rivers is like the king of picking up garbage fantasy points.
He is.
And he really is.
He is. That's why you have him on your fantasy team, dude.
Like, the Chargers are always that team that's trying to come back in the fourth quarter, you know. And sometimes they do. Sometimes they'll win games like that. But it seems like every time they're out there, it's like they're fighting back from a deficit.
Well, it's funny because you look at Phillip Rivers, he had as many passing yards almost in the fourth quarter alone as Patrick Mahomes. And you look at the numbers. Oh, if you didn't watch the game, well, Rivers, you know, what do you have? Three touchdown passes, one interception, threw for 400 yards. And you're like, wow, Mahomes, a very pedestrian, you know, 17 to 26 for 256 and four touchdowns and no picks. I'd much rather have the Mahomes numbers because those numbers are misleading when you look at Phillip Rivers' final line. Stafford gets a lot of that stat stuffing too. Of course, think about it. They're on teams that typically are losing, and they got to put up those numbers.
Yeah.
So Patrick Mahomes is like, man, at Texas Tech, I threw 26 passes in the first quarter. What's this NFL stuff, man? My arm's not even loose. All right, let's turn to Big 12 football. We'll talk with Riley Gates about K-State's issues coming up in a little bit. Injuries already impacting the Big 12 race, in my opinion. Rodney Anderson, I think the best running back in the Big 12, he's out for the year with a knee injury. That's a big blow for Oklahoma. Now, of course, they've got three or four top recruits right behind them, so they'll probably be all right.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Kemp, the quarterback for Iowa State, remember, he was awesome against Oklahoma last year in helping the Cyclones upset the Sooners in Norman. He is questionable day-to-day, although they got good news, Iowa State. They thought maybe he was down for the year with a knee injury. And I bring these two up because Oklahoma and Iowa State will open the Big 12 season this weekend. They're going to play each other, and that's the Big 12 opener, both teams. And Oklahoma, I know, looking for a little payback after last year, but both teams have serious players, important players that, well, Anderson won't play this weekend, and then their starting quarterback for Iowa State may not play either. Here's your Big 12 schedule for this weekend. Believe it or not, KU wins one game, and now they're favored. KU's favored against Rutgers at home. Rutgers lost to Ohio State big this past weekend, as has everybody against Ohio State. You tell me, guys, this doesn't look very good for the Big 12. I look at the Big 12 early in the year, and I'm not impressed at all. K-State's not as good as I thought they'd be. Texas isn't as good as everybody thought they would be. Texas Tech isn't special. Iowa State's got some issues already. KU, we know, is KU. West Virginia has looked good. I'll give them that. TCU, we still got to find out. Oklahoma State really hasn't played anybody yet. Oklahoma, you know, they really haven't played anybody that great yet either. Jury's out, and they got a key injury. And Baylor hasn't looked super impressive either. So you look at the matchups this weekend. Rutgers at KU. KU is favored. Oklahoma, number 5 at Iowa State. You would think Oklahoma would get a little payback. But then after that, look at these non-conference games, and you tell me who you would pick. Duke at Baylor.
Oh, Duke.
I take Duke.
Yeah.
West Virginia at North Carolina State. I'm going to call that a toss-up game.
I'd pick West Virginia I mean, I'm with you. It's not.
NC State has had quite a few upset wins at home over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Boise State at Oklahoma State. I'll take Boise State.
Interesting.
I'd take Boise State in that one. It's no better than a 50-50 toss-up.
No, probably not.
So that could go against you. Texas San Antonio at K-State. You figure K-State should win that game. Yeah. But the way they're going, who knows?
Yeah.
USC at Texas. Oh, I'm not sold on Texas. Of course, USC's not that great either.
We keep talking, Texas isn't as good as they thought they'd be. Well, Texas hasn't been as good as anybody thought they'd be for six or seven years now.
Exactly. Houston at Texas Tech.
The new norm.
Houston at Texas Tech. I don't like Tech's chances in that game.
No.
Houston blew out Arizona.
No, Houston looked good the other night, too.
And how do you feel about TCU against Ohio State in Arlington? I know it's in Texas, but that's not going to be a huge home field advantage. TCU's off to a 2-0 start. Ohio State can't be stopped with their offense. Does anybody think TCU's got a good chance to win that game?
No. Yeah. I watched TCU a little bit over the weekend, and I wasn't very impressed with how they looked, to be
honest. So, based on all those matchups we just went through, it doesn't look to be a favorable weekend for the Big 12.
They'd be lucky to go 500 this weekend.
If they do that, they do well.
Well, they get at least one win. Oklahoma and Iowa State.
Yeah, well, but you can't count that. I'm
also
talking non-conference.
At least one loss.
Yeah. I'm not counting that one. You know,
it's like when they just do the gymnastics and throw up the high and the low and
Of all the games I just gave to you guys, the only favorites in that would be Kansas State, and West Virginia. The rest could go either way or go the wrong way for the Big 12, and West Virginia could easily lose.
The favorites could all go either way too. You know, like. Well, you said the rest could go either way. You know, KU Rutgers could go either way.
UTSA could go either way.
It's every one of them.
I know. There's not one of them
that you're just like, Big 12 is going
to
win.
What I'm trying to prepare people for is a bad week for the Big 12 is what I'm trying to do here.
Come on, Debbie Downer.
If the best chances for you to win are Kansas and Kansas State, and usually that's okay with K-State, but the way they're playing right now, that seems crazy. If those are your two best chances to win a game in the Big 12 and non-con this week, then yeah. I don't like their chances this week. All right, Scott Frost. Adrian Martinez was hurt late in the Nebraska game. Here's Scott Frost talking about the injury. It sounds like it's not as bad as they had feared.
We got about as good a news as we could have gotten on Adrian, so he's going to be day-to-day. But we're going to get guys reps, get Andrew as many reps as we can, get Matt reps and potentially somebody else. So want to go into the game with at least three guys.
Now, that hit, there was it's a little bit of controversy. Scott Frost is having the Pac-12 and the Big Ten investigator look into it and review the play where Martinez was hurt. It doesn't look very good when we look at the replay that maybe a player was twisting Martinez's leg after the play was over. So they're going to look at that, and we'll see if there's any kind of ramifications for the Colorado player. But Frost wasn't super happy about that. That's a game that Nebraska felt they gave away. They had 565 yards of offense, ran for 329, had 7 sacks on defense at home, and lost somehow. It is amazing they lost that game. Serena Williams, we talked at length about that whole situation yesterday. We're not going to rehash it other than to tell you.
I missed out on that.
Yeah, well, that's on the podcast. Good way to plug that. Go to our podcast. Go to KDCountry94.com.
Well, I heard the conversation. I just missed out on the conversation.
Twitter, social media, it's all there on our podcast. We were very strong in our comments, and I stand behind them today as well. I saw a little bit of TV last night, and Max Kellerman, I saw this on YouTube. Stephen A. Smith is scary. He actually says that Serena, when she brought up sexism, that's where she lost. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. And it's scary when I agree with Stephen A. Smith. But Max Kellerman was bringing up, well, Serena didn't even see. The first violation should have never been announced. And he starts comparing it to other sports, which isn't, it's oranges to apples. I'm sorry. If that's your best argument, you have no argument. And then he goes on and says, well, Serena didn't even see the coach give him the signals. That's beside the point. That's not the rule. It's not about whether the player sees the coach or not. It's whether the coach is trying to coach. And that's what he was doing. And he admitted to that. So these people that talk about this on these talking heads, they don't even know the rules themselves. And then they're criticizing a rule they don't even understand. Well, just shut up. I mean, at least do your research and your homework. And I mean, at least do some homework and understand what you're talking about before going on national TV and spewing misinformation to people that also didn't watch the match.
Right.
I'm willing to bet Max Kellerman has not watched any tennis other than Grand Slam finals.
He doesn't know nothing.
Even if he's watched those.
Yeah. And
wants to talk boxing, I'll listen to him. Boxing. He knows boxing.
You know, and then there's like two sides to the coin on this deal that I've noticed because, you know, on one hand, Serena says, I didn't see him give me any signals. And then she says, "Well, whatever he was giving me a thumbs up."
Yeah, right.
So which is it?
Well, why would you? If he?
But I didn't see it.
If you don't take coaching, why would the coach waste his time giving you signals?
And why would he look around to see if anybody was watching before he did?
And why would she so overreact to that violation that didn't cost her a point?
I'm gonna stop. You guys.
I think we already know. I think we know the answer to that. We'll let you make your own answer. All right, but anyway.
So overblown.
Anyway,
it's ridiculous.
It is absolutely a joke. Anyway, let's put a little bow on this the best we can. The International Tennis Federation has supported their umpire. They came out and said Carlos Ramos is one of the most experienced and respected umpires in tennis. His decisions were in accordance with the relevant rules and were reaffirmed by the U.S. Open's decision to fine Serena Williams $17,000 for the three offenses. It's understandable this high-profile and regrettable incident should provoke debate, but at the same time, it's important to remember Mr. Ramos undertook his duties as an official according to the relevant rule book and acted at all times with professionalism and integrity. And this is very interesting because the United States Tennis Association, the Women's Tennis Association, basically vilified the umpire. And this is what's scary. The impression that you're left is two organizations who benefit from Serena Williams' star power bend it over backwards to appease Serena, who acted like a spoiled brat on the court, at the expense of the less celebrated Ramos, who got paid $633 to call the match. It's a pretty dangerous message to send out to other umpires. Take on a big name, and we will disown you. The sexism narrative also fails to reflect the statistics from the U.S. Open. 86 code violations were handed out to men, 22 to women, over the entire tournament.
But he's
also known as the strictest umpire on the circuit, has had run-ins with others. And, by the way, when you play tennis, you know who the chair umpire is going to be before you play. Serena knows that this chair umpire gave her sister a coaching violation just last year. Serena knows who the umpire is. She knows she hasn't had any problems with him. She said that after the match. But she knows he's had some run-ins with other high-profile players. She just thought he didn't have the wouldn't have the stones to go with that third violation of verbal abuse. She challenged him. She thought, this is my house. I got everybody behind me. He won't have the guts to do it. And she went so far, thought she was higher than a mighty, and then all of a sudden, he slapped her with it, and she was like, oh, my God, did you just do that? And then she started crying. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was all created by her coach at the very beginning by breaking the rules. And it was created by her continuing to argue the rules. And I keep hearing everybody going, well, Djokovic has never been given a game violation by Ramos. No, because when Djokovic got his second code violation, I think earlier this year or last year at Wimbledon, he quit. He knew I don't need a third. And this is what I keep hearing from people. Well, a game penalty is just too severe. It's not worth a game. Has any other man got a game penalty? Well, yes. John McEnroe got disqualified from the Australian Open before. Yes, it's happened. But you don't get just one violation, automatically get a game penalty. That's not how it works. You've got to accrue three. No, Djokovic has never done that. Thus, he hasn't had a game penalty. Had he got a third code violation, just like Serena, guess what? He'd have a game taken away. But people don't know the rules of tennis and thus spew a whole bunch of misinformation.
You can't say this kind of stuff, Wade. You're rerouting the narrative.
That other people want to force down our
The narrative
throat.
Is a nice little stream flowing, and you're building a dam and driving it the other direction. And that it kind of draws the picture of something about a conversation I had with some folks yesterday, pointing out the difference between the local media and the national media. And uh-huh. We don't work the same way, and we're not beholden to anybody, and we can kind of say how it is and be objective. And
that's
yay.
And that's how we're different. I'm not jumping on the wagon to fit somebody's narrative and agenda about sexism and racism when it doesn't apply. He's punished men's players for slow play, for racket abuse, for verbal abuse. He's done this. He's one of the strictest umpires in the world. And he, oh, God forbid, he actually applied the rules.
Did his job.
Okay.
He did his job. But it's a Grand Slam final. He should never do that.
Hey, would you please stop talking sense? I can't take it anymore.
I know. Well, then we'll... You know, if you don't want us to talk sense anymore, let's bring in Riley.
Perfect. Speaking of not talking sense.
9:33 is our time. 64 degrees. Riley Gates on the way.